the economy without putting a racial justice or gender justice lens on these issues, they fall flat. But by bringing out LGBTQ, not as just, you know, support gay marriage, but to bring in a racial lens, shows that Senator Booker is both speaking to the base, but also showing quite a bit of complexity in his understanding of the issue. I think it was a great moment in American politics.
Well, I want to go back to Varshini Prakash on the issue of climate change again. Your response to the fact that the Green New Deal was not mentioned. We have a very brief 30 seconds, please.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was another disappointing moment. We were hoping that one of the candidates would mention it. And also tonight, considering that tens of thousands of young people have been out calling for a Green New Deal, we've had demonstration after demonstration. And that conversation about the Green New Deal is largely what has propelled climate change to top the charts as one of the most important issues in the Democratic on the Democratic side. So we'll certainly be looking for that tonight.
Well, we want to thank you all for being with us. Varshini Prakash, founder of the Sunrise Movement. Anna Maria Achila, co-executive director of the Center for Popular Democracy. Amy Allison, joining us from the debate site in Miami, Florida, president of Democracy in Color, founder of She the People. And Anand Giridharadas, editor-in-chief of Time Magazine, his new book, Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World.
Editor-at-large, I want to be clear, I do not run that magazine, and I'm not qualified
at large.
On anything.
Yeah. Of course, tomorrow we'll cover the second debate. That's tonight in Miami, and tomorrow's the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us with Nermeen Sheikh.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Oregon Zoo Summer Concerts, presenting Green Sky Bluegrass Saturday, June 29th. All ages welcome. Tickets and more information available online at zooconcerts.com.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a morning news and public affairs director, as well as an evening news and public affairs director, to manage the news and public affairs programming. For these two full-time positions, we're looking for people with proven experience in audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
Tune in to KBOO on July 4th through the 7th for a live broadcast from the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival. We'll start the broadcast from the Waterfront Blues Festival on Thursday, July 4th at noon, and broadcast the fest every day from noon through 10 p.m. Again, that's the Waterfront Blues Festival, the largest celebration of blues, soul, funk, and rhythm and blues west of the Mississippi, July 4th through the 7th from noon to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, tomorrow begins the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion.
Tonight, the KBOO News salutes our LGBTQI friends, family, and compatriots who have helped build our progressive communities in Portland and beyond.
We start our broadcast with a roundup of headline news and wrap up the hour with a special broadcast of the Laura Flanders Show, featuring local activist and historical figure Scott Nakagawa.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 27th, 2019. I'm Lisa Loving.
And I'm Teresa Mitchell. Oregon Child Welfare Director Marilyn Jones left her position abruptly yesterday. Jones had been tasked with reforming Oregon's foster care system and child protective services. The AP reports her resignation follows Governor Kate Brown's decision to install an oversight board and hire a team of outside consultants to reform the troubled agency. The governor says her consultant team will work to hold the agency accountable for making urgently needed improvements, including recruiting more foster families, finding safer placements for children sent out of state, and shoring up training for caseworkers and supervisors. The spokesman would not say whether Jones was asked to retire. Deputy Child Welfare Director Jana McClellan will take over as interim director until a permanent replacement is hired. A department spokesman told reporters Jones will remain at the agency as a consultant until August 31st.
A former ICE agent in Oregon has been sentenced to 25 years in prison for sexually abusing a child for more than 9 years. 56-year-old Blake Northway formerly worked as a deportation officer with the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office in Southern Oregon. The Medford Mail Tribune reports Northway was sentenced yesterday in Jackson County Circuit Court after admitting to sexually abusing an underage female family member between March 2009 and September 2018. The Jackson County District Attorney's Office says Northway was arrested last fall following a Medford Police and Oregon State Police investigation. Northway had been assigned to ICE's Medford office but was placed on leave after his arrest September 13th. Officials said none of the charges or convictions stemmed from Northway's ICE duties.
The 8-day Republican walkout over cap and trade legislation in the Oregon State House has prevented votes on the nation's most generous paid family leave program, money for affordable housing, and other key measures. The legislative session ends at midnight Sunday, and Republicans have said they won't come back until Democrats agree to put the climate measure before voters. The Associated Press reports today that Governor Kate Brown can call a special session, but lawmakers essentially would have to start from scratch on legislation. The proposed measures still on the table include a paid family and medical leave policy that would be the first to offer 100% replacement wages for minimum wage workers, plus 12 weeks of paid leave to those making more than $1,000 a year. Also, campaign finance reform that would place limits on campaign contributions. Oregon is one of five states with no limits on campaign contributions. As a constitutional amendment, the bill would need final approval by voters in 2020. Foster care funding, including a proposal to hire almost 350 new foster care caseworkers, is stalled. A national advocacy group sued Oregon in April, and the union representing caseworkers recently protested outside the Capitol, saying they are severely understaffed. Affordable housing legislation, encouraging development of denser housing units, including duplexes and triplexes, and a tobacco tax that would increase taxes on tobacco and enact a wholesale tax on e-cigarettes, raising $346 million every 2 years to plug a funding gap in the state Medicaid program.
Yeah, just to continue updating that GOP situation in Salem, hundreds of people and a parade of diesel trucks circled the Oregon State Capitol today against the stalled climate change legislation. Still, 11 Republican senators continue to block the vote on an emissions-lowering cap and trade proposal. The Democratic Senate president says the measure does not have enough support among members of his own party. But the Republicans are still absent without leave, as more than 100 policy and budget bills are caught up in the stalemate. Democrats have 4 days to convince Republicans to return before the legislative session closes on Sunday. A statement from the Republican Senate caucus last night says conservatives won't return to the state house unless the cap and trade bill is referred to the voters to approve.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, it's the Indigenous Power Hour. Tonight's weather is cloudy with lows around 53 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy with highs around 71 degrees. Today in history. In 1973, then-President Richard Nixon vetoed a Senate ban on the bombing of Cambodia. The quote of the day is from Miep Gies, who was one of the Dutch neighbors who helped the family of Anne Frank hide from the Nazis. She said, quote, "I certainly think that another Holocaust can happen again. It did already occur. Think of Cambodia, Rwanda, and Bosnia," end quote.
The Supreme Court today ruled the Trump administration did not provide adequate justification for the question to be added to the 2020 census, "Are you a U.S. citizen?" The justices ruled that the citizenship question seemed contrived. However, Chief Justice Roberts referred the case back to a lower court, leaving open the possibility that the Trump administration could prove the necessary justification to add the citizenship question to the census. But by the time the lower court could rule on the citizenship question in the 2020 census, it will be over. The administration previously told the court that the questionnaire needed to be printed by the end of June, so President Trump has asked lawyers if the census can be delayed.
A North Dakota photojournalist in the country as a DACA recipient has been detained in Montana and released by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Ibrahim Ramirez Cordon is originally from Guatemala and holds a valid U.S. work permit and a driver's license, all of which were examined by ICE agents who boarded the Amtrak train Cordon was riding from Seattle to South Dakota. While passing through Montana, the journalist was questioned by ICE agents on the train at one stop. Then at the next stop, more agents boarded and arrested him. The Billings Gazette reports that Cordon explained to the officials that his DACA recipient status was valid until May of 2020. But the ICE agents detained him over an issue relating to his visa status from 5 years ago, which was just before he received his DACA status. After being jailed on Monday, Cordon was released Wednesday afternoon. He has had work published in Outdoor Magazine, Matador Network, Patagonia, and REI, among others.
In a 5-4 decision today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the act of gerrymandering or politically biased congressional redistricting does not currently fall under the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. The decision was written in regard to two cases that had been brought to the court involving partisan redistricting in Maryland and in North Carolina. In both cases, evidence was presented proving that district maps had been drawn with the intent of favoring one political party over another. The decision, handed down by conservative Chief Justice John Roberts, concluded that, quote, federal judges have no license to reallocate political power between the two major political parties. Acts of gerrymandering can, however, still fall under the jurisdiction of state courts. Almost 40% of maps drawn by politicians were struck down or redrawn by courts after the 2010 census, compared to just 11% which had been drawn by independent citizen commissions. Oregon's districts are currently drawn by the state legislature, but proponents of two ballot initiatives are seeking to establish independent commissions before the next cycle of redistricting takes place in 2021.
The Twitter Corporation today announced a new policy of labeling offensive posts by powerful people instead of deleting the tweets or banning the author. The policy appears to be aimed at presidents and other world leaders and political figures who use Twitter to threaten or abuse others. Everyday people can still expect to be banned. The new policy was rolled out after complaints that President Donald Trump has gotten a free pass from Twitter to post hateful messages and attack his enemies in ways they say could lead to violence. From now on, a tweet that Twitter deems to involve matters of public interest but which violates the service's rules will be obscured by a warning explaining the violation. Users will have to tap through the warning to see the underlying message, but the tweet won't be removed. Twitter said the policy applies to all government officials, candidates, and similar public figures with more than 100,000 followers. In addition to applying the label, Twitter says it won't use its algorithms to elevate or otherwise promote such tweets.
And Democratic presidential candidates yesterday began the first half of a two-part series of debates in Miami, Florida. The first debate was staged between Elizabeth Warren and candidates John Delaney, Bill de Blasio, Jay Inslee, Tim Ryan, Tulsi Gabbard, Julian Castro, Amy Klobuchar, Cory Booker, and Beto O'Rourke. The debates series features more female candidates than ever before in U.S. history. Candidate O'Rourke surprised many by responding to a question from Telemundo in Spanish, saying that everyone at the border should be treated with respect and dignity. Cory Booker was given the most speaking time of the candidates at over 10 minutes, closely followed by O'Rourke and Warren. The presidential hopefuls discussed health care, the opioid crisis, immigration, Iran, and briefly, the climate emergency. Warren spoke of her comprehensive plans to address health care and other issues. Julian Castro called on the country not to criminalize the desperation of the refugees at the southern border. Governor Jay Inslee of Washington State was accorded the least debate time and used it to address climate change. The second debate, of course, is tonight, starting at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and will include presidential candidates Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Peter Buttigieg, and other candidates.
The World Naked Bike Ride is this Saturday night, departing from Laurelhurst Park at 8 p.m. KBOO's Diablo spoke this week with organizer Megan Sennett about protesting our dependence on fossil fuels, recognizing the vulnerability of cyclists, and body positivity.
This is Diablo with KBOO Community Radio, and I'm on the line with Megan Sennett, who is one of the organizers of this year's World Naked Bike Ride here in Portland. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thanks for coming on so late. So tell us about the World Naked Bike Ride. What is it about? Why do people do it? And how can we support it?
Oh, good question. So, I think World Naked Bike Ride has been going on officially for just over 15 years now. The first one was not technically an official World Naked Bike Ride. It was just a renegade ride where people head out on their own, riding through town naked. But I think, you know, this ride started as a protest against our dependency on oil. And I think that really resonated with people 15 years ago, and that message has rung true since then.
So,
Ian, you're asking how people can support it?
Yeah, so it's not just about dependency, protesting against dependency on oil. There's a couple other major things, right? It's about...
That's
the primary.
That's the most important. Yeah, and then since then, it's kind of morphed. People certainly ride also now as, you know, a celebration of the human body and all that it can do. And, you know, part of that is that certainly we can propel ourselves to the world on two wheels. And the way that people can support it, I would say number one is to get out and join us. So World Naked Bike Ride this year is this coming Saturday, June 29th. We meet at 8 and we ride at 9. And so number one, come out, be with us, ride. We start at Laurelhurst Park this year, so it's going to be a pretty amazing start, and the route is stunning. And way number two that people can support us is, you know, we're 100% volunteer run. We need more volunteers. We always do. If we were to do it perfectly and have, you know, enough people that I feel like we're covering just the bare bones, we'd need 75 more people than what we have right now. And it's easy to sign up. All roles are designed basically so that you can volunteer and then get on your bike and join us. So you don't have to ride with us, but you're certainly encouraged to. And then third way that people can support us is, you know, in addition to being 100% volunteer run, we're 100% run on donations, and we always have been. So any single thing people can do to help us financially is awesome. If every single person donated a dollar, we'd be able to pay for the next year's ride. So you could just straight up donate, or you could give us money in exchange for some fun things that we have to sell. And this year we like stepped it up a notch. So we have temporary tattoos this year designed by a local artist, Krista. And we also have glow-in-the-dark stickers, which we've never had before, made by a local company called Sticker Ninja. So you could support local by buying tattoos and stickers.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about the stickers.
That's awesome. I haven't heard of that. And they have posters also this year?
Oh, yeah. Every year we print posters. And then we also have just what's left over from next year. We've got a ton of stickers. We have fanny packs, we have saddle covers so you can have a seat cover for your bike, all that jazz.
Cool. Glow in the dark stickers. That's, I'll have to pick up some of those too.
Yeah.
So you're looking for additional funding and you're looking for volunteers, and we're about 75 people short. I've been volunteering as a marshal probably for the last 5-6 years.
Thank you.
And you can go to the website, which is
PDXWNBR.
PDXWNBR.org. If you just Google World Naked Bike Ride Portland, that's the first thing that pops up too. And on there is a volunteer page, and they're looking for everything from mechanics to first aid. People do first aid, start point cleanups, end point cleanup, greeters, merchandise table, info booth, all kinds of things. You can sign up and help make this great event happen.
Yeah, you know, I would say right now what would make this thing really hum well is if we had just a few more fundraisers at the start. And again, it, oh, sorry, my, I think my alarm's going off to say, wake up. fundraisers are certainly needed at the start. And then a few more marshals to ride along with us. And that's also, it's an easy gig. You just, you get to ride with us and be able to just impart knowledge to people about what the ride is and show people the obstacles along the course. And then the last thing, you know, if we could just have a few more end spot greeters. And it is such an easy thing to do. You just ride the route, you get to the end, and you hand out some flyers for the after parties, because we have a bunch of after parties this year.
So well, let's talk about after parties in a second, but what exactly is a fundraiser?
Okay, so I think it's the most fun of the roles because you get to, quote-unquote, dress up. So the ride is as bare as you dare, so you could go completely naked if you'd like, or you could wear a little flare like a tutu or, you know, body paint. We have a ton of body painters this year. So you get to dress up a little bit so people notice you, and then you wander around in pairs, so you and another volunteer wander and collect donations and hand out merch. It's pretty easy. You know, it's not a very long role, and you just get to hang out in beautiful Laurel Horse Park doing it.
That's great. Mm-hmm. It's also like you're raising fun as well.
Sorry. Yeah, definitely fundraisers.
And then, so the end point, you're looking for greeters at the end point too. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll help spread the word for that and help people do that. And then the end party. So it gets to the end, and then there's, you know, between 8 and 15,000 people-ish.
Yeah, you know, right? It's so hard to say every year. We kind of oscillate between being central and then just a little bit further out from what people would consider central Portland. And so the numbers would also ebb and flow. And it's always also, you know, dependent on weather and you know, how social media wants to play nice or not and get the word out for us. Thanks, KBOO, for supporting us.
Of course.
Real lag right now, so we don't have to pay to play. But yeah, so who knows? I would say guaranteed, no doubt, we're going to have over 6,000 people. We do have somebody who's going to be counting the ride this year, so we'll have a real number at the end of this year. But yeah, in the past we've peaked at just over 10,000, and it's 100% possible that we were at 10,000 again this year.
Cool. So there's a couple after parties. I'm looking at the website right now. Hey Love PDX is one of them.
They just came on tonight. I am so excited. Yeah, Hey Love PDX is at the Jupiter Next. Super centrally located for those who are heading home, kind of, you know, like in the southeast area or up into northeast. So that's right off of on Burnside.
We're on the same block. KBOO's on the same block as Jupiter. So.
Yeah, so. Two neighbors.
That's right there.
Yeah, we're so excited. So they just came on. I don't know if you've seen this establishment, but it's stunning. It's like high ceilings with gorgeous green plants kind of cascading down from the rafters and stuff. And they've been really positive and really kind and great to work with. That one, unfortunately, you know, maybe it's because it's all brand new seats or whatever. I don't know. But they're going to require that people wear underwear, and we're going to respect that. But the other parties are completely nude-friendly. So also up in Southeast is Crush Bar. And they've been hosting parties, I don't know, let's pretend, like I think 6 years. And they get it. They host a pretty rockin' party. They have clothes checks and, you know, specials and no cover, ha ha ha, and all that. I've been to that party. It's a great dance party. And we also have the outdoor after party. So every year, you know, we have made a promise to the Portland Police that where the ride ends is not where people will remain. You know, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, kind of thing. So once we get everybody to the end spot, this year people will be looking for the Tiki Bike, which is kind of a massive homemade crazy tiki bar on wheels that will have a DJ playing live. And so this flame-throwing tiki bike will be riding along with the riders through the whole route and get to the end. It'll hang out for a moment just so that the rest of the ride can catch up. And then it'll make a big flame-throwing scene and head off into the night. And we don't know where they're going, but we do know that we've heard great things about the party. And it's basically a dance party under the stars. So
that's what I usually go to. I love Carl and his crew. Yeah. That's my favorite one, and you cannot miss it. It's a tiki bar on. It's a bike with DJs and the flamethrowers is unbelievable. So
yeah, and I would say, I mean, that is certainly not for the faint of heart. It's a completely unsupported after party. Everybody's responsible for themselves. We certainly encourage that.
Oh yeah,
people go with a friend and that they lock their bicycle up sturdy. Not just like throw it in the bushes after wherever it ends. If they're deciding to drink, that they drink responsibly, all that stuff. But
absolutely,
man, it is a fun dance party, and they all can be. I mean, I have danced at a party close at Crush as well.
I was going to emphasize that all these events, all Pedalpalooza, especially World Naked Bike Round, because of the number of people, is leave no trace. So pack it in, pack it out. I was bringing a couple extra big garbage bags. And that means everything, your cans, your cigarette butts, everything. Don't leave anything
100%.
Behind. So.
Yes, thank you. I mean, we have cleanup crews, and they do a really good job. In fact, we got really lovely feedback last year. We were up in Cathedral Park, and when the cleanup guy showed up in the morning to clean, there was nothing there. And he like, jokingly says, like, this is BS. Like, why are you even asking me to show up? Like, there was nothing there. But it was kind of mind-blowing that that our communities did such a good job that when he showed up in the morning, it didn't even look like we had been there the day before. So I want to keep that up, especially for the beautiful Laurel Hills Park. It's a historic park. It's beautiful. And for what will soon be to be revealed as the end spot is also, we're really lucky to have that, the route, the support of the city, and a beautiful place to protest in.
Absolutely. And it's all secret, the route secret, but it's not super long. It's about 5-6 miles usually.
Yeah, we keep it as close as possible to 6 miles. And similarly, same with the start location. We kind of go back and forth every year about, where is the route going? Are we going through new territory and showcasing the ride to new people, or are we going down some kind of more classic tried and true loved streets? And I'm pretty excited about this year's route. I hope that people really enjoy it. It is so difficult. We really have to consider everything, like people's safety. So are we crossing tracks? Are we going downhill? Are we going on a heavily potholed street? Are we crossing major intersections? That kind of stuff. We have to consider, bus lines. We can't interrupt public transportation. There's so many things to consider. And I think that there was some great compromise this year, and it's going to be a really lovely route.
That's awesome. So again, it is for protesting our dependency on oil. It's about body positivity, and it's about our vulnerability as cyclists. Being naked, though, I always hear this, like, can you get arrested?
Only if you're a jerk. I mean, the act of being nude in Portland, Oregon, if it's for a protest, which this is sanctioned, you're covered. sorry. But no, you'll be fine. Just be safe.
It's covered by the law. As long as you're not being lewd or obscene or engaging in any type of sexual activity. People often misequate nudity with sexuality, and that's not what this is about.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. That is just something that you 100% cannot fully understand until you are at the World Naked Bike Ride. But, kind of two things. One, there's nothing sexy about standing around in a park naked with a bunch of strangers, nor is it very sexy to ride a bike on the road. That being said, it's also truly one of the most beautiful events I'm a part of every year. There is nothing like riding to the city naked with 10,000 of your new friends supporting something that you believe in.
And that was Diablo speaking with Megan Sinnott. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 22nd, 27th, 2010. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. The news team for tonight's broadcast is Ron Bead and Alex Connor. The engineer for tonight's newscast is Randall Rigo. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is myself, Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Lisa Loving.
And I'm Teresa Mitchell.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Tomorrow begins the 50th anniversary of the 1969 Stonewall Rebellion. Tonight, the KBOO News features a special broadcast of The Laura Flanders Show, honoring LGBTQI communities and commemorating the Stonewall Rebellion.
Hi, I'm Laura Flanders, and this is The Laura Flanders Show, the TV and radio program that seeks to raise radical spirits by interviewing forward-thinking people with real-life models of shifting power from the few to the many in the worlds of arts, entrepreneurship, and governance. Fifty years ago, at the Stonewall Bar in New York, gay pride took the form of a riot, not a parade. Today, the question remains as relevant as ever. Just how do we define love is love, and what are we willing to do to defend one another? This week, I speak with a group of LGBTQIA leaders who each has a different relationship to being out and proud. We've come a long way, they say, but in the next 50, 100 years, we have an even longer way to go. It's all coming up on The Laura Flanders Show, the place where the people who say it can't be done take a backseat to the people who are doing it. Welcome.
We have come a long way from a riot against police on the streets of New York's Greenwich Village, now just known as Stonewall. To many around the world, that night in 1969 is recognized as the launch of the modern gay rights movement. From gay marriage and the recognition of LGBT families to the movement for transgender rights, progress has been made, but where do we have yet to go? And when it comes to liberation, the cry of those early rioters, many of them young, trans, poor, people of color, what do we need to do next? There is still no federal law against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity, and many LGBTQI people continue to live in fear and experience violence, even death, in their countries throughout the world and right here. In light of that, instead of looking back 50 years since 69, we're going to look forward 100. Where will we be in 2069? For that conversation, we've convened a great group. My friend Scott Nakagawa, longtime community organizer, senior partner of Change Lab, Bri M., disability activist and podcast host of Power Not Pity. Check it out. Idafe Okporo, director of the RDJ Refugee Center in Harlem, and Kaz Mitchell, co-executive director of Circle of Voices, Inc. Well, we have a lot on the table, but we have, 100 years to think about. So let's start with Stonewall. What's its resonance to you, Kaz? Want to start?
And being a New Yorker, I've heard so many stories about how wonderful it was and how it gave us such a voice. But then I heard from some of my elders of color or as they would say back then, African Americans. And they felt left out pretty much from the story, or the Crispus Attucks-ism of only one of us being there. Mm. So that was a real touching moment for me.
And what about you, Scott?
Well, I worked for many years in the LGBTQI movement, and it's a reference point for people. You know, people look back in that time. It represented a moment of liberation, a very different kind of politic than I understood myself to be promoting when I was leading some organizing through the national, at the time, National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. And so, yeah, it was. It's a kind of a touchstone for people, you know, something that reminds us where we started. No matter where we go, we began there in a riot.
And what about you, Bri?
Well, I mean, I guess as a younger person, I can say that Stonewall was definitely a touchstone moment. But also, I feel as though, you know, thinking about who threw the first Molotov cocktail is something that people don't remember. And people my age don't even think about Stonewall as a riot. Yeah.
How about hearing about Stonewall? Idafe, did Stonewall mean something to you growing up in Nigeria?
As someone who's born in a foreign country, United States has always been like the country that have been able to uphold the rights of our citizens. And I've always looked forward to living in a society like America. A lot of people who are born in America are subjective because of the laws and how they grew up in this country, but being from a foreign country, I'm more objective than being subjective. Stonewall represents a lot to me, even though I'm in a foreign country. It gave me the insight that we too can one day be like Americans.
Do you remember when and where you heard of the phrase or word Stonewall, which was originally the name of a nightclub, still is?
Yeah, bar? I heard about Stonewall just when I came to America. But before I came to America, I know about the gay rights movement, but not in the term Stonewall.
What about you? Do you remember, Brian, when you first even heard the term Stonewall, name of a bar?
Yeah, I mean, Stonewall has always been a place to enjoy yourself and to dance and, you know, be in communion with other queer people. But again, you know, being
remote and distant.
Yeah, being pretty distant and being a history that we don't really acknowledge.
I mean, the history, Kaz, I don't know whether you want to fill in the story a little bit, but the history was not the history of white gay men saying we would like our rights, please.
Right. There was a wonderful activist that stood out, and I had the pleasure of having drinks and sharing the story. Stormy Delivery, who is known for being very outspoken, would tell the story of being there and saying maybe I threw the first punch, but just the pictures of what evolved from the conversations showed a group of people just enjoying New York City life back then. And then someone disrupted them, and they said, we're not going to take it anymore.
Someone being the cops who had raided the place many times, very brutally, in a very short period of time, but had a habit of doing exactly that to all the gay and lesbian bars around town.
Well, that's been our history, even in Philadelphia, city of brotherly love. A lot of people left Philadelphia because of that same type of police action, intimidation of the gays.
After Stonewall, the documentary directed by John Scagliotti chronicles the history of lesbian and gay life from the riots of Stonewall to the end of the 20th century.
In the wake of the Stonewall riots and the sudden invasion of people into our movement, a good invasion, a number of organizations, starting in New York and spreading to other cities, called Gay Liberation Front, were established.
When Stonewall happened, it just seemed a sort of logical progression from after we left just radical politics. And then I joined Gay Liberation Front right away after Stonewall.
We were a front like the Vietnamese Liberation Front, from whom we got our name.
Why are you here today? Darling, I want my gay rights now!
It was tremendous excitement because we were all moving together and thinking in terms of we, not in terms of I.
Hey, gay is good!
This is the Laura Flanders Show. I'm Laura. That was a clip from the documentary film After Stonewall, directed by John Scagliotti and made available to us by First Run Features. You heard the activists Harry Hay, Marsha P. Johnson, Barbara Giddings, Carla Jay, and Michael Bronski in that clip. You can see them at our website. That's www.lauraflanders.org, where you can also watch our entire show. Next, back to my conversation with Scott Nakagawa of Change Lab, Bri M. of the podcast Power Not Pity, Kaz Mitchell of Circle of Voices, and Idafe Okporo from the RDJ Refugee Center. We've been talking about the riotous past of Stonewall and exploring its rapturous future.
LGBTQI, and there's, I think, more letters, for people who are perhaps embarrassed to ask what they all stand for. Can you just lay it out, Scott?
Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, and queer.
The fact of the acronym reveals how this movement has attempted to grow. Has that been effective, just sort of adding extra letters? What do you think, Bri?
Although we have like letters that represent us, I don't think that just naming who we are is the end all and be all.
You're nodding, Scott.
Yes, I agree. Though I am old enough, 58 years old now, to remember when it was incredibly controversial even to name lesbian and gay. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force actually started as the National Gay Task Force and then added lesbian, and over time slowly added more and more groups in order to try to represent the broad spectrum of the community. But the controversies we went through, the original marches on Washington, for instance, where there was argument about whether or not trans people could march by our side. There were organizations, national organizations, that refused to name gay or lesbian in their names because they felt like their constituents wouldn't want to receive mail. You know, so it is something to me. This change is a remarkable thing. It's not nearly enough, but it at least gives us some leverage.
What do you think, Kaz?
Well, I think it's good in a way because it shows a sense of expressionism. But I worry about funding. I try to tell some of the folks, you're queer, but that might not be on a form. So we might not be able to quantify that data because your stance. So we have to work together on some of the different identities.
Fill us in on some of the people that you work with and the work that you do.
Well, Circle of Voices was founded originally as a Women of Color Music Festival because the others back then weren't quite cultural. So the founder.
Wait, what do you mean? It was all white?
Well, that's the real way of saying it. I'm trying to be nice. So our founder, Jean Wimberly, said she needed some soul. So she added some soul. And now we work in the city providing expressionism, but we also have a health component to make sure that our friends in the community know they can get culturally competent health care, services that they need, so they can express the art.
Is it still true that lesbians, and all the more so lesbians of color, and even all the more so lesbians of colors with disability, access the least health care in the country, I think?
Yes, statistics show that even with cancer, there may be more white women diagnosed, but the death rates of most diseases will show that women of color, especially Black, African American, have the highest rate of death, because by the time they get to the hospital, they're in serious condition or close to death.
And I think lesbians tend to go less often.
Oh, yes, because of lack of trust. How am I going to be treated? By the color of my skin, by the texture of my hair, and then I'm gay on top of that? You might just kill me or experiment on me.
And some of the routine health care that women who are bearing children or who are thinking about bearing children get, lesbians who aren't bearing children don't go into hospital for contraceptions and for birth-related, parenting-related reasons, unless they're having kids. So I think some of those statistics are still pretty shocking, not that I have them on the top of my head. Idafe, talk a bit about who you work with, because that's a whole other group.
So, like, we are talking about Stonewall, but one thing that is very significant is that America and some other westernized countries have been able to achieve liberation, but they are 80-plus countries where gay people are still criminalized. And LGBTQ people who are criminalized in their own countries look for countries whereby laws are favorable. I came to America as an asylum seeker because my country passed a law that criminalizes same-sex by 14 years imprisonment. After I was granted asylum, I didn't have a place to stay. I stayed at the YMCA and moved into my own apartment. It was a bit of a struggle for me.
You also had a long stay in a detention center.
Yeah, I stayed about 6 months in the detention center. I will get to that when we get to what we have for us in the future. So when I was released from the detention center, I didn't have a place to stay. Thousands of LGBTQ people who migrate to foreign countries who do not have friends or family face the same circumstances that when they are released from the detention center, they didn't have a place to stay. Or when they stay in city shelter, they are being molested or sexually harassed, trans folks, and things like that. So having a shelter whereby they can, those who are experiencing housing insecurities can be able to have a place to stay, mitigate the risk of them being victims of sexual assault. So somebody told me that all my friends told me was to have HIV, because there's housing for people living with HIV and AIDS, but there's no housing for immigrants. And LGBTQ immigrants are victims of sexual exploitation and different kind of violence, which can be mitigated by housing. So we're filling the gap by providing housing for LGBTQ asylum seekers and refugees who are expressing housing insecurity in New York City.
Vulnerability is vulnerability. Your podcast speaks to another vulnerable but outspokenly proud people, Rye.
Definitely. My podcast is about disability justice and the lived experiences of disabled people of color. So I think in talking about vulnerability, did you know that the Stonewall actually rejected a blind person from entering a year ago because they had their service animal? And you know, that is like a definitely vulnerable position to be in, right? But I think like another thing about vulnerability is that disabled people often find themselves constantly vulnerable, especially if you're a queer disabled person.
This is the Laura Flanders Show. I'm Laura. My guests are Kaz Mitchell of Circle of Voices, Idafe Okporo of the RDJ Refugee Center, Scott Nakagawa from Change Lab, and Brian, creator and producer of the new podcast Power Not Pity. On the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising, we're reflecting on the milestones reached so far in the struggle for LGBT liberation while looking ahead at the challenges that remain. It's ever a struggle to keep movements alive. Next, I ask how we could have come so far in championing liberation and become a beacon of hope around the world, and yet in the U.S. still face an insurgency of hate, not to mention a shockingly high rate of killing of trans people. Here's Light of Love by Lady Alma off her new full-length album Twilight, a 9-track anthology produced by Mark DeClive Lowe.
I got this feeling in my heart that makes me want to tell the world just how I feel inside. It's the joy of love that fills me up when I am down and makes me love my life. Make no mistakes, at times I want to just curl up, not face my pains and go run and hide. But it's the light of love that lifts me up and keeps me there.
How can we have come so far, on the one hand, been such a beacon to people around the world in the way that Idafe is mentioning, be celebrating now this 50 years, and still have on our hands everything that you're just describing?
Identity is a very tricky issue, especially in America. Before I came to America, I didn't know that I was a black person. So when I came to America, I discovered that differences within the LGBTQ community, there's still discrimination that, oh, I don't want no fat, no femme, and no black person in a gay dating app to show how discriminatory people could be. But apart from that, in quantum physics, polarity exists. For one end of the polarity to exist, another end have to exist for them to coexist. That is like right, left, male, female. So we have not been able to understand how to coexist between the two polar end. That is why we'll continue to have a far right and a far left. What we need in this movement going forward is people that would be at the middle to bridge the gap between the right and the left. I like the word allies, because allies is saying that I do not have anything to do with black people. I'm a white person, but I'm going to stand in the gap of black people.
Well, but it's the standing that's important. Just saying allyship doesn't make much a difference.
Right, and you have to be trusted. But one of the things that I know as a person over 50 that racism and discrimination has always been there. It's just been on a pot simmering, and now that we have this other person running our country, it has released some of that energy out and given people this empowered sense that they can go back to that mantra. But what we have to show people is that we're not going to take it anymore, mm-hmm. and stand and work together and re-educate. I think there's a problem with our finances, our economy, the way we think. We got to build the bridges, because money speaks for everything in this world. If you don't have the money, you're going to be left out. You will lose your voice.
Yeah, it's not our finances. It's a whole lot of other people's finances, if you want to ask me. Is capitalism the problem?
Well, capitalism is one of the problems for sure, you know, but we should remember what came before it and what we might be walking into next, mm-hmm. which might be a much uglier form of economy.
You've been talking about disaster capitalism.
Disaster capitalism of oligarchy, of, you know, sort of refeudalization of many different parts of the world. The return of chattel slavery, the, you know, incredible networks of human trafficking that we're facing, all of these things that are happening in this so-called liberated environment. You know, when I think of Stonewall, I think of a time when people stood up, right? We had E Pluribus Unum, out of many one. But, you know, sounds lovely, but it was a very kind of coerced unity. So LGBTQ people, people of color, women, many groups of people decided to step up and say, no. We are many, and our voices will all be heard, and we cannot have this sort of negotiated peace based on the coerced unity that you know, we had here in the United States. Now we are in the process of negotiating what that means, mm-hmm. you know? So how do we then move forward? Do we move forward together? Do we have to move forward separately? These are the kind of critical questions I think we're facing. The white nationalists you mentioned are actually putting up one kind of challenge. We have to answer their challenge and say what we want this to be in the future.
So for change to happen, there have to be a favorable environment. And this is a climate for change. Because when there is chaos, there's opportunity for people to think differently. In America, in the last 50 years, gay rights movement have been the fastest paced movement, because in a gay pride parade, you will see people from Goldman Sachs and poor people, you will see white people and black people. There is no other movement that you will see people of all diverse backgrounds, Mormons, Christians, Muslims, will come together and to be able to march. Since we have a favorable climate for change, because we have a leader that is causing a chaos, people can choose to either create a change that will revolutionize America as an entity, as a whole, or we sink together. And that is the moment we are trying to navigate this change. It's very difficult for people to understand. If I keep on as an activist shouting at people, people wouldn't change. I don't tell people to change anymore. I tell them to listen, to see and hear other people's story. Because when you hear somebody's story, you better understand who they are. The right-wing people also have a point of view. And if we that are very woke and consider ourselves leftists do not listen to them, it will continue to be a chaos and change will not happen.
How much time do we have to listen? And is it really true that everybody comes out to gay pride? At the moment, these days, the pride parade is more about a kind of, I mean, at least the official pride parade is kind of a, I don't know, a parade of commercially sponsored floats. Kaz, do you want to push back a little?
Well, it is in a way, but Circle of Voices was in the parade last year. And we got our float because one of the rules is if you do have a sponsor, the fees go up. So we paid for it ourselves. And those women said they never knew what it was like to receive all the love going through the streets, people reaching, and you saw the unison, and you saw the police trying to dance but know that they couldn't dance with you. The ones that are gay, because there is a gay component in New York City Police Department goal, gay officers.
I mean, I just want to stop you because you use the word love, which I really want us to use as we look to the future. Because to me, what set the LGBT liberation movement apart, in the same way that we saw the struggle against discrimination and segregation have as a front line the fight against anti-miscegenation laws, was love. That people fall in love across boundaries, across binaries, across, you know, conveniences, and they fight like heck for people they love. And if we're going to put forward, I'm on a soapbox now, but if we were going to put forward any vision, I think it is a vision of love. helping one another across those various barriers.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I want to add something to the conversation, honestly, because I find that pride is usually, you know, all about homogeneity. And, you know, I want to include the voices of disabled people, queer disabled people, disabled people of color, trans disabled people, the fact that we are invisible, completely invisible, and pride is completely inaccessible, and the parties that happen are also inaccessible. We have to figure out ways.
So what would be some of those ways?
Justice.
Now we're finally getting to looking ahead 50 years.
Sure.
What would a society that put love as the first value, mm-hmm. sappy as it sounds, look like for you, for example?
I believe access is love. And I want to believe a Stonewall that's fully accessible. I went on the website today. They have nothing there about accessibility. They have nothing there
For the bar or for
exactly,
the protest.
For the bar or the protest
or
other pride parties that are available to you. Honestly, I think that when we think about the future, we have to think about all types of bodies. We have to think about moving together. Collective liberation is about all. And I find that disabled people are often left out of the conversation, and I really want to change that.
Scott, I know you're going to give me a reality check here.
Well, I actually do believe in love. And I believe that people join social movements because they're looking for love. You know, they're looking for recognition and respect. If you're hungry, there are better ways of getting fed than joining a march to demand dignity for your family. You know, what drives you to that moment is love. And I think that we need to build on that.
Edafe?
For me, love is acceptance and sharing. Because when I came out as gay, it was very difficult for me. I didn't see anybody that looks like me or talks like me. So we as a community that have been able to achieve some level of acceptance should trickle it down to other parts of the world. Like the NRA, for example, they are fighting gun rights movement in every other part of the world, because a fight for queer people here is a fight for queer people everywhere. So we should share our love and acceptance everywhere by spreading to every part of the world. Secondly, is that like gay people should be able to adopt children like straight people. And in the next 50 years, I want it to look like, two gay people are getting married, they are adopting a child. It's like a straight male and a female are getting married and they are adopting a child. Here in America and abroad, is just sharing the love abroad.
Kaz, time
yeah,
for more.
It shows when you care. As I say, make the change you want to see. I would say go to the clubs, because we know where the clubs are, and see the ramp or the ramp that's not there and try to get one in. And that's what Circle of Voices founder did. She went to a music festival, didn't like it, so she created one with all the isms that her people aspire to. And that's what I want to see in 100 years from heaven or wherever I am, that we have a full, loving group of people that stood together, that are working together, and every voice, let it be heard in some way, and re-educate and show the importance of philanthropic support. Don't always take from the not-for-profit. If you have a blessing one day, give a dollar to that not-for-profit that's been giving you Metro cards for 3 or 4 years, because every penny counts.
Last word, Bri.
I think that, yes, love is all about taking care of each other, but I also think that love is also about recognizing when something is happening that you are not okay with and changing that in some way. Acting with people who are like you and deciding that you want to change the world. I think that love is also about recognizing difference and recognizing that we can create a more equitable world by changing what we're complicit in. And honestly, I think that the Stonewall itself and the institution that it represents is complicit in ableism. And I mean, I don't know what it's going to be like in 50 years, but I want to see that change.
I would hope we could change that in less than 50 years.
Yeah.
Bri, thank you so much, and Kaz, and Edafe, and Scott. Sometimes, as in 50 years ago, love looked like a riot. Just saying.
For information on all my guests, go to www.lauraflanders.org and be sure to become a subscriber to this podcast, meaning subscribe. If you haven't done it already, please do it now. It helps increase our numbers, and write a review if you haven't. We don't pay for costly PR firms. We rely on you to spread the word, and we know that you will. For those who subscribe, you get my weekly commentary first. I call it the F word. The latest is on my recent trip to Barcelona and the mayoral elections, which were settled in a very community way. Find out how by becoming a subscriber at www.lauraflanders.org. And thanks.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a morning news and public affairs director, as well as an evening news and public affairs director to manage the news and public affairs programming. For these two full-time positions, we're looking for people with proven experience in audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Tesla City Stories on Friday, June 28th from 8 to 10:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall in Portland. Tesla City Stories is a live recreation of the Golden Age of Radio performed monthly in downtown Portland. These all-ages shows feature comedy, mysteries, romance, and more, with live Foley sound effects, music, prizes, and audience participation. Again, that's Tesla City Stories on Friday, June 28th from 8 to 10:30 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, Rose City Native Radio.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City.